So I'm not going to say good afternoon. I'm not going to say all the things that have already been said. I'm just bringing greetings from St. Louis, Missouri. It's my distinct pleasure to present to you my a portion of my dissertation results on my study called Visualizing Opportunities, Inspiring Choices, Which Embodies Success or Voices. This research is really special to me in that, you know, it's my dissertation research, but also the fact that when I looked at and chose the word voices, or chose that as the acronym for my project, it was because my mother used to, whenever I was getting in trouble or I found myself in a particular situation that I knew that I really didn't need to be in, it was my mother's voice that I always heard. And it was during that time that I knew that I could either get myself together or I would be facing the consequences of that behavior. So this particular research has to do with sexual health communication, and my hope and my goal in this research is really to be able to help girls to be able to have those voices or hear those voices of their moms when they come across those particular situations in their life. So when we look at the statement of the problem and we consider the declining teenage pregnancy rates in the United States in all populations, it's important to know that the rates of sexually active teens has not declined. What we do know is that adolescents are engaging in riskier sexual behaviors at earlier ages and thereby exposing themselves to STDs, including HIV. The goal to include parents, mothers in particular, in the conversation as well as the solution is critical in that mothers are the first educators of the child, and being the first educator, mothers teach their children about basic safety such as crossing the street. But our aim as public health professionals should be also to empower mothers to educate their children about sexual safety, not once, but in ongoing increments throughout their development. The study aim for this program is to identify factors that influence the decision of African American mothers to communicate with adolescent daughters between the ages of 9 to 14 about sexual health topics, including physical, emotional, as well as consequences of those choices. In focusing efforts during early adolescence, this goal is for mothers to intervene during the critical window of time when relationships are close and influence is still high. What we know about the window is that it is very individual in that the different is going to be different for every child, but it's going to be best predicted when looking or talking to the mother or a caring adult who has that close or personal relationship with the child. The Voices program of research was conducted in three distinct phases. Phase one consisted of collecting qualitative data through focus groups and interviews. This phase took 4 months to complete, and for this phase there were 19 participants recruited, and after saturation was reached, this concluded this phase. Phase two of this study consisted of survey development of the S.R. Griggs inventory. I was real creative with that name. That was created for the cross-sectional survey collection. And during this phase, based on themes that emerged from the focus group transcripts, it was pilot tested with several mothers from phase one, as well as women in research who had daughters who were willing to provide critical feedback on the survey structure, questions asked, time to complete, as well as congruence with questions related to the theory of planned behavior. This phase lasted for 4 months, and then the concluding phase, which just concluded a couple weeks ago, phase three, was with 167 participants to actually complete the S.R. Griggs inventory. And for the purposes of this presentation, I will be reporting only on phase one from this study. This here is the model. It outlines a pictorial guide of the variables being studied during the course of this research. And due to the limited time for today's remarks, I will focus primarily on the two columns of the model, the external variables, so mother's demographic variables, personal variables, and mother's religiosity will be my focus. And then, in addition, the theory of planned behavior variables of attitude, normative beliefs, subjective norms, and perceived behavioral control will be discussed. Mothers were recruited into this phase of research primarily through a variety of places and establishments. The biggest success came from word of mouth and personal referrals to participate. This method was utilized initially due to the limited slots for participation, which was 25. As participants were notified about the study, they were encouraged to notify the primary investigator. Participants were contacted and screened over the telephone to give participants anonymous ID numbers and assess their level of sexual health communication. Once baseline information was established, participants were put into focus groups based on their availability as well as their ability to attend sessions. During the telephonic survey, participants were asked a series of questions regarding past discussion of sexual health topics. The topics covered body changes, menstruation, sexual intercourse, birth control, HIV, AIDS, STI, as well as condom use, or discussions about condoms. 89% of the participants self-reported that they had positive sexual health communication with their daughters, and these were indicated if they had two or more topics that they discussed with those daughters. As the focus group transcripts were coded, common themes were identified that coincided with the variables associated with the external variables and the variables from the theory of planned behavior. This afternoon, we will discuss the following, which I've said, the demographics, religiosity, mothers reported sexual history, but we will not talk about the knowledge and the intention to communicate because those were measured more specifically in phase three with more specific scales. When we think about the external variables, the demographics from phase one, there are some striking things that we find. All of the participants here, when we look at the reported education level, had achieved some level of higher education. This information is very comforting to see in that this information demonstrates that women believe at any level of their educational attainment that they still need support in this area. Support being defined as through professionals as well as through familial and peer support is critical for this group to feel connected and feel confidence in completing this type of training. The age distribution of the participants were three distinct populations. Millennials, which are born between 1980 and 1990, Generation X, born between 1961 and 1979, and Baby Boomers, who were born between 1946 and 60. As more analysis conducted, this distinct age difference is going to tell us more about how the mothers and mother figures relate to their daughters as well as how they communicate with the daughters about such topics. With the external variable of mother's religiosity or faith, it's important for me to collect this data simply because when we think about African-American women, there's an important faith influence in how they allow this to communicate with their daughters about sexual health topics. So when we think about the external church attendance and participation, 17% that were surveyed had not participated or attended religious services in the past month, while the majority, 83%, reported having some connection to a faith-based institution in the last month. 53% of participants reported holding a Baptist affiliation, while other denominations reported were non-denominational, Christian, and Methodist. Some of the initial findings in these observations, in addition to these three distinctly different types of women who participated in this study, African-American women can no longer be put into a box on how they can be treated as well as reached when it's their desire to receive information about this issue. Mothers in this phase define teachable moments as critical when describing how to share faith and values with their daughters. Some examples that were shared were watching reality shows, outings, and having discussions about friends in school. This exemplar quote, I don't know what just happened. This exemplar quote here is an example of one of my mothers discussing being a role model to her daughter. This particular mother was a survivor of domestic abuse, and she shares a portion of her story here. My kids saw a lot when I went through and they have seen when I gave my life over to Christ to make a difference in my life. So just lead by example. And that's what I try to do for you. You can't tell a kid not to do something that they clearly see you doing every day. So you have to be an example for them and show them, okay, this is the way. We went to church Monday through Sunday, and I still veered off. Kids are going to do that. But once you instill that in them, they know the way. They'll come back to it. You got to let them live their life just like you lived yours. You got to be the bigger voice in their heads. So when we think about the external variables for mothers, this turned out to be somewhat of a controversial topic because mothers were asking me, why are you asking me this personal information, especially in phase three? And that was one of the reasons why many of the mothers dropped out of the study. But in looking at phase one of this information, we focus more on the mothers' experiences of their own mothers talking to them about sexual health. And when we look at this table here, it outlines some of the questions that were asked. And as previously stated, questions focusing on individual level testing and sexual debut were not collected during this phase. Information such as, did their own mother engage in sexual health communication with them growing up? 68% reported no. 52% reported that this experience was a negative one that has influenced how they're currently parent their daughter. So when you look at this contrasting view, I had one mother in the very same two mothers in the very same focus group that had very conflicting experiences. Mother number one, my mom has always talked to me. We always had a very good open relationship. So I think that I just kind of follow suit in that. I think you know from me and that I hear, and I think you should always be able to talk to your mom even now at 46. Whereas mother number two said, me and mom, we had a close relationship, but she's never been open with talking about sex or those sorts of things. And so because of that, it always made me very open with my children. For just that reason, there was a lack of conversation there, and so that's something I've always made sure that I did from the very beginning. And then I found that there is something called mother gooses in the neighborhood. And mother gooses, as defined by one of the participants, is a person who you can go to her house after school, and at that time they didn't have latchkeys, so she would be the person that you could talk to about everything. She knows and monitors the neighborhood, and you could go to her house, all the kids do, and you were like her daughter. And you could open up and feel comfortable, confident to share secrets, and they would stay. Mother Goose knew how to talk to your mom about what you couldn't communicate or what you felt. When we look at the next set of themes for the theory of planned behavior, perceived behavior control and self-efficacy were strongly measured in phase one. This tenet was actually used thinking about how comfortable or confident mothers were to discuss certain sexual health topics. Topics and levels were broken into comfort, confidence versus barriers. And barriers were broken down into three distinct barriers: barriers that cause arguments, barriers rarely discussed, and barrier topics were avoided due to no comfort or no confidence or not knowing how to even discuss. So with the comfort and confidence category topics, mothers were most comfortable or confident in discussing had to do with puberty and body development. And mothers were most vocal when it came to discussing the importance of academics, life skills, and faith and values. When it came to those barriers that caused arguments, the topics mothers identified as causing the most arguments with girls was clothing, makeup, and boys. Many mothers stressed that they had set ages for their daughters to begin wearing makeup as well as to begin dating. And then the barriers with topics rarely discussed. The topics rarely discussed were those specifically with diseases or self-care. These topics are the very topics that need to be discussed more with daughters so they know more about their health, how to take care of themselves. And reasons given for not sharing had to do with their age and mothers who didn't feel that it was relevant at that particular time. And when you think about barrier topics, these were avoided due to the discomfort and having no point of reference of how to even have a positive conversation. Here is an example of a mother talking about picking out clothes. You know, I feel that young ladies that feel that they have to show so much of their breasts and their butt and everything has to be so short and tight and that they are lacking self-esteem and confidence and that they feel they have to do that to attract a boy. They can't use their mind and their heart to attract anything. So since I have been having these conversations with her and, you know, telling her these things since she's young and starting to develop, now it's just, you know, second nature that she will point something and say, wow, look at that. And, you know, we'll talk about it. So just talking with them really helps on that. The theme of attitudes and normative beliefs, there were some common questions that asked them what are some good things as well as bad things that would happen if you were to talk to your daughter about sexual health topics. Good things were outlined as she will continue to talk to me or she'll come to me when she has a problem, whereas the bad things would be she'll get more curious or nothing bad will happen at all. When we think about dealing with emotions, that was something that was very difficult for moms to talk about. One thing that dealing with emotions, and we're talking about with their menstruation, this particular mom tells a story of how her daughter was very controversial, very angry when it comes to time of her month, time of the month. And she states that, I'm old school when it comes to discipline today. So, you know, we talked about some thoughts or insights, some thoughts you need to keep to yourself. I may say or do something that you may not like, but this is real life. You're going to have a boss. And I'll just skip down here to when she says, so there's at sometimes there's some yelling and things like that. But now I would say now that she's learned that you can't just say everything you want to say. And what I found is that because they have a lot of PMS symptoms and things, we give them Advil to try to give it to them before they start their period, even a week before if we can. And then with subjective norms, our last thing that we'll talk about. Subjective norms is going to be defined by Ajahn as one's perceived social pressure to perform or not to perform a behavior in question. During the focus groups, the following people and institutions were reported as being important: church, pastor, community, school, teacher, husband, father, significant other, family being defined as daughters, siblings, parents, grandparents, as well as aunts, pediatrician, social media, including Facebook and Instagram. And these institutions and people are important influences or resources for mothers when engaging in sexual health communication, and they will be important to consider when we think about future work in developing interventions for this particular group. And so as I hasten to close, I want to talk to you a little bit about the implications for public health nursing practice. And listening recently to an interview that Gloria Steinem gave on a memoir that she was doing, and she was talking about her research and her how she got into the field of being an activist. And she talked about visiting being on an archaeological dig. And she was not paying attention, but she was intrigued by a snapping turtle. And that snapping turtle got her attention, and she felt that she needed to save that snapping turtle. And that snapping turtle that she took, they were in a muddy area. She walked that snapping turtle away from the muddy area and walked it to a very safe, stable road and placed the turtle there, thinking that she had done something. And her instructor told her at that time, you know, I think you thought that you saved the turtle. But the point is that turtle took 60 days to get to where it was, and now you have just ruined the opportunity that turtle had to fertilize those eggs for the baby in the muddy area that it was near. So I tell this story to say this, that it should not be our aim to save the world without considering the needs of those who we are intending to save. Our needs to fix things may not be what the community truly needs, and what our focus should be is to listen and assist them by giving them the education and the skills on their own journey so that they can one day develop their own voice to do the work one day on their own. So this is just a closing thought that one of my participants said during one of the focus group sessions. My message or my voice in their head will be to keep your eye on the prize. I mean, you have goals that you want to achieve and choices that you're making. You know, now you make that may keep you from being able to accomplish those goals. I wasn't out there growing up, but you know, I was making choices that probably I would make a little different if it was presented to me in a different way. So that concludes my presentation.